The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Okay, yo, nope, that's not what we say. Yo, 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 yo. And welcome back to Creeps and Crimes. That's your part, right?
Podcast. Guys.
So what's going on?
What's up? We're waiting for your response because we don't know what we want to talk about today.
No, we don't. We've sat here and just talked in circles. Actually, we did our What's New Wednesday. We've been very efficient because I have a secret surprise for Morgan that Morgan has no idea about.
This is my face whenever I hear the word secret surprise.
You know what?
Number one, secrets. Red flag. Number two, surprises. Second red flag. Morgan hates both of those words.
Well, one thing that I do know that we can talk about really quickly is I've been seeing like so many of y'all emailing us, DMing us, commenting. Are you guys posting on YouTube? Guys, I swear.
We fail.
Look, I'm trying my best. Basically, we got the camera situated. We got the SD card situated. And we even made an announcement about it. We're like, we're going to be on YouTube again, guys. We fucking figured it out. We didn't figure it out.
We didn't.
You want to know?
You know what's so funny, though?
It's not even our fucking fault.
What's so funny about that is that I had a patient today. Mm-hmm. And they came in and they were like, you're the girl with the podcast.
Oh.
And I was like,
nope.
Oh.
Never heard
of
her.
Do I know you? And they were like, oh, well, I was just here, like not too long ago, like a month back. And we were talking about it. And I was like, well, you must have been very special because I don't tell any of the patients about the podcast.
Yeah, what got us there?
And they were like, yeah, I tried to start it on YouTube, but I've got so many kids and they're this loud and da 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 da. And so we didn't get through any. Me and my husband didn't get through much. And they were like, well, it was really good.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, wow. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Anyway, I forgot where I was going with that. What were you just saying? YouTube.
YouTube.
I told them, I was like, well, we're kind of failing on YouTube right now. So you can definitely tune in on Apple and Spotify. But I'm not here to promote.
You know, put it in your ears. But oh my God, thanks so much for listening.
I know.
I was so scared about what you were about to say. I was like, were you about to say that this person said that our YouTube was shit? Because they're right, but I'll fight them.
No.
Guys, I've been trying my best. It's not us anymore. It's the software. And it's a miracle that we're even getting audio out right now.
We are going to create our own software.
Yeah.
Damn AI.
Yeah. Really ruining everything.
I would like to cancel AI.
I would too. I'm going to fight AI.
Siri listening in right now.
Yeah.
That bitch is Siri, like, excuse me?
Get ready, bitch.
You use me all the time. And guess what, Siri? You fail me every
Actually,
time.
Actually, I don't even use my Siri anymore because she doesn't work. She does not do anything correct.
I do in the car. Like when I texted you and said, hey, we're not locked out of the house. Found the key, credit card. And you're like, what?
I didn't even read it and I just called you. I was like, I can't. I don't even know what that means.
You're like, oh, well, Morgan texted me off her phone, meaning they probably got back in the house.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, interesting. I don't know. I was like, when I was reading, I was like, did they pay someone to come and get it undone or what happened?
Oh my God. No, that was actually very scary how easily it was for Aaron to get back in.
Yeah.
I did not like
that. Yeah. Morgan, what she's talking about is she got locked out of her house the other day.
Aaron locked. I'm making this very clear.
And it was not
I hope
her.
That Aaron hears this. Aaron.
Hey, Aaron. Aaron.
My fiance, Aaron, locked us out of the house.
He sure did.
And then blamed it on me.
Yeah. Every time Logan locked me out of that same house, that's like the chronic lock yourself out of the house.
Just home. Too easy.
I mean, how many times did you have to... We're going to have to make a copy of the key.
Yeah, no, we do.
And we're going to have to give one to Susie, one to me. And then I'm going to also bring Susie mine because she needs to have that.
She needs both.
She needs both
on
file.
I'm going to give one to the kids.
Yeah, because you know who's going to keep that safe? Them. 100%.
Specifically the youngest.
Yeah, I know. He'll be like, I buried it in the backyard at this location. And we would go find it. And it would fucking be there.
These geo-coordinates.
Yeah. And it would be there. I know
it would be there.
He's just very efficient in every single thing that he does.
They all are. It's incredible. I mean, you guys should have saw us, though. Aaron pulls this giant ladder, like a roofing ladder, out of the garage.
I know it was.
Leans it up against the side of the
house. Did he fix the siding while he was up there?
No, but he's up there and he's shaking this screen. And I'm like looking around. I'm like, all right.
Oh my God.
Our neighbor's outside. I'm like, hey, you
girl.
Got an extra key to this house? And she's like, why would I have that?
Because Taylor had to give you one because you locked yourself out so many times.
She's like, no, I don't have that. I'm like, okay, well, we're going to keep trying.
100%.
He's like, I don't understand how she was talking about bending the fucking screen. This screen doesn't fucking bend, Morgan. This screen doesn't fuck bend. I'm dumb bend.
That's exactly what Logan said. Guess who bent it? Me.
I know. I'm like, well, obviously she's done it before, so figure it out.
Yeah. Who bent the screen?
Also, can me. I spot you on the ladder? Why am I looking over from 50 yards away and you're up at the top of this flimsy ladder, which, mind you, if it falls back, smashing my windshield.
Well, it caves in too, like when you're standing on it. It's not,
I'm like, get up.
It's not a code ladder.
I'm like, can you get down? I'm like, okay.
Okay. All right. Macho man.
CEO of ladders.
Calm down. All right.
Oh,
no, why? No, really though. Why? Why are they the CEOs of whatever it is that they're, you know,
doesn't
what Logan's
matter.
The CEO of currently? The sink. Fixing the sink that fell out when I was sitting on it. And that should be illegal for sinks to fall out like that, because
they're also the CEO of possums.
Oh, CEO of possums. Yes, both
for,
of them.
For secrets we'll take to the grave.
That we will take to the grave. You know what I'm the CEO of this week is I'm... Okay, guys, everyone go on our Instagram post and comment what you are the CEO of this week. Because
let me think of mine.
Yeah, think of what yours is. I am the CEO of looking like a serial killer to all of my neighbors this week.
Oh, yeah, nice.
I need a drum roll for this one. So I'm on Facebook, right? Mm-hmm. And my neighborhood, like, it's a side of town. So it's like a community, all right? It's not like just one neighborhood. Either way, this community, Facebook has a Facebook page. And everyone, like, always comments in there. There are all these, you know, old homes. And anytime they're renovating something or taking something out or doing anything, they're like, hey, someone come, if you want to come pick this up, I'm giving it away for free. Could anyone use this before I go and donate it? And everyone's so nice. They're like, it's this brand, this year. Da, 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 da. Well, I've fallen in love with every single thing that's been posted in this place, but I never catch it before I go. Like, some other girl ends up getting it. I'm like, damn you.
Hey, is this available? Hey, is this available? Is this still available?
And I'm like, girl, look, listen to me. I know you're going to take that and you're going to sand it down and you're going to put like a very light wash on it to make it look like it's from Pottery Barn, but please don't do that because it's so gorgeous and I want that stained wood. That's what I need. And so I'm getting like frustrated, right? So I turn on my notifications for this group.
Right? Oh, no.
I get a notification yesterday. Bing, pops up. Well, no, Sunday. Bing, I get this notification. I look at it and it's like, this address, these things are left on the front porch. Here's what they are. If you want to come get them, come get them. I'm itching. I'm laying in bed. I have got to shower. I like didn't even shower. We went to a wedding this weekend. Congratulations to Asher and Victoria. It was a
beautiful,
gorgeous
wedding.
Gorgeous wedding. So, you know, Sunday, we're daylight savings. That shook the shit out of me. I forgot all about it.
Yeah.
And anyways, I'm like, I gotta hop in the shower. So I run in and hop in the shower and I'm like, look, we got ready. We gotta go get this thing.
Yeah.
So I immediately comment. I'm like, I'm coming to get it. I'm coming to get that armoire. So we run over there. We go and we get it. We bring it back. I'm obsessed with it, but it's fucking 5 inches too tall for the place that I need. But guess what that 5 inches is in? Oh, the top of it. But it's like attached because it's a piece of wood because it's this old, old piece of furniture.
Mm-hmm. Like so a little like,
yeah, like the little frilly shit on top. But there's like a top shelf and it's got the same wood, like exposed wood on the top. So it's gorgeous. So I'm like, I can just saw off the top.
It's like a crop. You crop in the picture.
I could do that.
You crop the video. You're going to crop the armoire.
Just so you guys know, I do not have any power tools. I have a drill. You know, for screws, but that's the extent of the power tools that I have. Anyways, I'm finally done with everything, but it's dark because it's fucking daylight saving time. So it's dark, right?
Eat that shit.
So I'm like, I need to go outside. I want to saw off the top of this so I can get it inside as soon as possible. And I don't want it to rain on it. So I go outside. It's dark at night and I take one of our ring lights outside in an extension cord. And I walk across my backyard and I'm sitting in my backyard with the ring light on, just very close, and a flimsy $3 saw from the Home Depot. Just going to town on this freaking wardrobe. And then I see my neighbors walking their dogs and they're just kind of looking over the fence really on.
You're like,
this.
I'm a carpenter.
I'm like,
they're like, that's what Jeffrey Dahmer said.
Oh my God. It's pitch black outside and I'm just silently with a dim ring light just in the corner of my backyard.
Morbid.
I was like, oh my God, let me go inside. I like had to like make it a point to be like, hey guys, how are you doing? So they weren't like, what is she
immediately
doing?
That makes them more suspicious.
I know. And then I was like, shit, should I tell them I'm a true crime podcaster or is this gonna make it worse?
It's gonna make it easier.
So then I was just
suspicious.
Like, hey guys, and then I ran inside because I panicked. I haven't seen them since. I haven't walked by the house once.
Well, I wouldn't either.
Yeah, he's a professor too.
Oh yeah, you're fucked.
Yeah, they've
definitely
called the law.
He's definitely a psychology professor and he's definitely just
analyzing
gave this
me
case
now.
To his students.
You're
at UT.
So right.
100%.
I'm going to go to his next lecture and then he's going to be really scared.
Yeah, he's gonna be like, okay, now I have a stalker.
Now I have a stalker.
And she's crazy.
Anyways, what are you the CEO of this week?
I would say I'm the CEO. You'll love this one. I would say I'm the CEO of overthinking this week.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to confirm that for all sources. We have
just to keep this story short.
Yeah.
Me and Taylor were trying to make plans. First night I was trying to just hardcore bail.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, it took me at least an hour and a half, 2 hours to conjure up this text like, hey, I don't think we're going to be able to make it. Like, what did I say? My social battery is just empty.
With an emoji beside it because she overthought it that fucking hard. She went and searched for the dead emoji battery.
And so I'm like, you know, like, we're just not going to be able to make it. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
She texts me back. I didn't know what you said first. KK. And I was already typing up an explanation text. Yeah. Like, for like why my social batteries. Whoa. So I'm sending that and I receive KK. So I send the next text and immediately I'm like, KK, really?
Yeah.
Do you know how long it took me to send this text?
Yeah.
And anyway, this goes back and forth for a little bit. And she's ends up being like, yeah, we ain't going anyway, bitch. I meant to text you. I just wanted to see how long you'd last because I knew you didn't want to call.
I knew she wasn't coming. And then at that point, I was like, I'm just going to let her think that she needs to text me about this.
And then we had to make plans for the following day.
God, Jesus Christ.
Just
Morgan's the CEO of overthinking this week. And I have stopped texting her until she gets out of this phase. I refuse to text Morgan. I don't know if you've even noticed it.
I have.
Yeah, I'm not texting you until you're done.
Unless we're on the Google Docs.
Yeah, that's it. That was the only time I was like, I'm scared to text her.
As long as we're not making plans, I'm cool.
No, because that's all we do. We make plans all the time. What are your plans? You know, what time are we recording tomorrow?
As long as we're not making mandatory plans, then yeah. I'm cool.
What time are you recording tomorrow? Like, I was going to text you that last night, and then I was like, she's probably going to overthink it.
We were just chatting through our...
Google Docs, our notes.
Aaron walks in. We look like liars. Yeah. Aaron walks in. I'm laughing at my computer. Who are you talking to? And I'm like, he's like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, just talking to Taylor. He's like, where? I'm like, oh, no, through our Google Docs. It's like the Google Docs.
Disappearing ink.
Empty. It's like the disappearing ink journal.
Yeah. But she's now given me the chronic disease of overthinking because I'm overthinking because she's overthinking. So we've both been overthinking, which is why I've been overthinking sending her just a text because I'm worried that she's going to overthink it.
Taylor's overthinking because she doesn't want me to overthink.
Yeah. So basically, we're canceled. You know, we're done. This is it for us. Final episode.
Guys, it's crazy. All right. Crazy world out here. Oh, yeah. Look at us. If you're driving, throw that shit on cruise control.
If you got a glass, pour that shit up.
And let's get creepy. One thing about Lumi is they saved my stinky feet.
Yeah.
I always thought it was my shoes or maybe that I wasn't wearing good socks. But you know what? It's just the odor actual feet. It's me.
It's just.
I tried to blame every single other possible thing, but it turns out it's just me. And Lumi's whole body deodorant saved me.
And Lumi is exactly what she says it is. It's a whole body deodorant. It is seriously safe to use anywhere on your body. Lumi is good under your pits, under your boobs, thigh folds, belly buttons, butt cracks, vulvas, feet,
you name it. It was created by an OBGYN who saw firsthand how normal BO was being misdiagnosed and mistreated. And now it's clinically proven to block odor all day and control odor for up to 72 hours.
How? Well, unlike some deodorants that try to mask odor with a fragrance, Lumi is formulated and powered by mandelic acid to stop odor before it even starts. It's like pre-odorant.
I love that.
I love that. And it's baking soda free and paraben free,
which is perfect for me because I have such sensitive skin that I've got to find the perfect deodorant. I go through deodorant after deodorant after deodorant to find one that works for me that doesn't rash me out. And Lumi has done that for me.
100%.
Lumi starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, 2 free products of your choice like mini body wash and deodorant wipes, and free shipping.
As a special offer for our listeners, the besties only, new customers get $5 off of Lumi starter pack with our exclusive code and link. And for a limited time only, returning customers can get $5 off of their next purchase of $30 or more too. Just use code CREEPSANDCRIMES at LumiDeodorant.com.
That's LumiDeodorant.com. Code CREEPSANDCRIMES. Thank you, Lumi, for making this holiday season smell a whole lot better.
All right.
Okay.
What do you have for us today?
So me being the overthinker that I am this week... Remember last episode you told me that you can see what I Google search?
Yeah.
So I was trying to find a topic and I went to type like conspiracy theories turn true.
Oh
like,
God.
Craziest conspiracy theories. I started overthinking. I was like, I don't want Taylor to see my Google search. So I pulled up. I
I pulled up my own Gmail account so that I could find craziest top. This is what I searched. Top 10 craziest conspiracies turned true. This is what I have
Why
today.
Why did you hide that?
I was nervous that you would see it. So today I'm talking about the Holmesburg Prison.
Okay.
AKA or otherwise known as and nicknamed the Terror Dome.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound good.
The Holmesburg Prison was a prison operated by the city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and the PDP, which is the Pennsylvania Department of Prisons. It is located, was located, still stands, but not functioning as a prison at 8215 Torresdale Avenue in Holmesburg, which is like suburb of Philadelphia or something. Like it is Philly city, like Philadelphia city, but it's like Holmesburg.
Yeah.
Outskirts maybe.
Yeah.
Not sure. The prison was operating from 1896 to 1895. But how did it become a prison in itself?
Right.
Well, that's because the Philadelphia Moyamensing, I'm really proud of that.
Yeah.
I know to locals that it is not right. Moyamensing Prison was becoming overcrowded. And the Moyamensing Prison opened in 1835 and was considered to be the prison of the city and the county of Philadelphia. It was the one that you went to. It was your county, your city prison.
Right.
It was originally three separate facilities, and it was known to hold some very famous prisoners like Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh.
And H.H. Holmes. Which you haven't covered him, have you?
I have not.
Yeah, he was.
Like, I should.
Serial killer.
Yeah. Crazy.
A low throat.
Yeah, crazy.
And a couple
crazy
of case. Others, like there was a couple famous boxers that I didn't recognize names. Maybe you guys would have, but I didn't include them. In 1896, it began to get one too many famous prisoners, and it resulted in a new prison in Holmesburg, aka the Holmesburg Prison, that opened in 1896, that same year that the overcrowding came to light, which is actually very impressive for them to be like, this is overcrowding, we need to build a new one instead of just overcrowding the prison.
Right. You're right, because so they definitely would have done that.
I'm a little impressed.
Yeah, proud of you guys. You did a great job. Yeah.
So the Holmesburg Prison was built with the philosophy. It was surrounded by this philosophy that was, quote, separate penal confinement, meaning upgraded isolation rooms. So like this was going to be more of like a solitary prison. It was major focus was on prisoner isolation. So like not like mass prison areas.
Like you don't need to hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the Holmesburg Prison was one of the worst places that you could be sent to in Philly. And you would be hoping and praying that you actually went to Moyamensing at the end of what I'm about to tell you.
Oh, God.
And the story starts with a man named Dr. Albert Kligman. He was born in Philadelphia on March 17th, 1916, and he attended the University of Pennsylvania, or UPenn. He received his bachelor's in 1939, unknown what he studied. I'm assuming probably like some sort of pre-med medical or like biological science. And then he received his doctorate in botany from the same university, UPenn, in 1942. After that, he went to medical school at, again, UPenn, and graduated in 1947, becoming a dermatologist.
Okay.
He had one focus, and that was fungal studies, which is where his doctorate in botany came from.
Where the fuck is this taking us?
Yeah.
I'm not even ready.
And sorry, I don't know what's happening in my throat here. His fungal studies ended up leading to a couple published papers that would eventually catch the eye of Holmesburg Prison. But before we get into that, I want to talk to you about what he is known for. Two major things. Number one, co-inventing the acne medication Retin-A, aka Tretinoin.
Okay.
He was the inventor of that. And this is really turned into a conspiracy turned true, aka the dark history of the invention of Retin-A.
Oh.
Like, this is the dark history behind that medication.
Okay, skincare girlies, let's
skincare
line up.
Girlies, listen the fuck up.
Here we go.
And number two, what he was known for was being an absolutely horrible and unethical researcher and doctor.
Well, good to know that he might still be making money off of us today.
Yeah, that
and all of our trends.
And he never got in trouble. Spoiler alert.
Oh, my God.
All right. So at Holmesburg Prison, there was an outbreak of athlete's foot that started to spread throughout the entire prison and all the inmates in the 1950s. And this resulted in the prison pharmacist to start researching athlete's foot, fungal infections, etc. And he ended up coming across one of Dr. Kligman's articles. So this pharmacist reaches out because he's like, oh, well, we're in Philly. This very all-knowing
amazing fungal doctor is just right here at UPenn working. Like, let's go ahead and call him up. He should be able to help us. So the pharmacist reaches out and he asks Dr. Kligman to come and visit the prison, which I'm going to just call him Dr. K. Dr. K agrees.
Okay.
At the time, he was a UPenn medical school professor of dermatology, and he was designing during this an experiment to research fingernail fungal infections.
Oh.
So that was like while he was working there, he was also using the university as a research hub for this experiment that he wanted to produce and do. So Holmesburg Prison was then, after this Dr. K gets involved, was the site of a decades long dermatological, pharmaceutical, and biochemical weapons research project. How did we escalate?
How the fuck did we get here?
All of which was led by the inventor of tretinoin, Dr. Albert Kligman.
Great.
Of course, when you think of the early 90s research projects in prisons, you know what they were thinking. All ethics and humanity right out the fucking
right,
door.
Gone.
They didn't give a fuck. They didn't believe that these prisoners were human beings at all.
Nope.
People were horrible.
Horrible.
The prison was a human laboratory for Kligman, with an inmate population as his subjects. And most of these inmates, we find out later, were voluntarily submitting themselves to this research because there was promise of very small monetary rewards. And most of them were desperate for money just to have everyday things like shampoo, soap, toothbrush, cigarettes, you know, like, so they were willing to, sure, we're going to do a dermatology study. Yeah, you can use my skin for a second. Like, no big deal. Like, well,
they didn't even take it to the extent of what's going to happen.
Exactly.
What they're testing.
But the amount of information they were given on what would be administered and trialed on them was also very minimal. So they were not informed whatsoever. But at the time, informed consent wasn't even a fucking thing.
Right.
So no big deal there.
That's crazy.
In their eyes.
That's
the
insane.
First time Kligman, Dr. K, walked into the prison, he said, quote, and this is a famous quote by this sick fuck, he says, quote, "All I saw before me were acres of skin. It was like a farmer seeing a fertile field for the first time. The idle collection of humanity was ideal for my dermatological study."
Sir?
Sick fuck.
You're Ed Gein.
So yeah, in Dr. K's eyes, this prison was perfect for his medical research, meaning he had the finances backed by UPenn, and now he has an entire field right here in front of him of skin, like he said, to perform his research on.
That's
which
so
originally
fucked.
Started with the fingernails. But it was perfect because to him, it had controlled conditions. You could monitor the inmates' diet. You could monitor their lifestyle. Everything was pretty standard across the board per inmate to inmate to inmate. And this would minimize disruptions in any of his research variables that you would have to find a controlled setting to do. So this was perfect for him. And at first, the prison had allowed him to use prisoners as part of his fingernail fungal research for a, quote, modest fee. This is the prison's words, modest fee that would provide us, aka the prison, with ideal opportunities. So they were like, okay, yeah, we got a foot fungus going on here, and you seem to know a lot about that. And Dr. K's like, I could definitely help you. I'm actually researching something like that right now. I would love to take some of your inmates and we can get to the bottom of your foot fungus. We're gonna get to the bottom of this. So they're like, sure, yeah, you no big deal. You want to use this could provide us with so many more roads and opportunities of financial gain that we could go down the road with if this was something that was successful, because we gave you the platform to do your experiments.
Whoa.
So once he saw his, quote, acres of skin, he decided, yep, this is the place. He began to visit the prison regularly and sometimes without any real authorization to be there. So yeah, the prison was like, you can use our area of expertise. Like, there was never like any sort of contract legally stating that he has authorization to come in and do this. It was all very shoved under the rug, hush, hush.
Right. So like no one even like really knew what the fuck he was doing there.
Exactly. According to Dr. K, in a later interview, this was years before authorities even knew that he was conducting not just one, but various studies on these prisoner volunteers. He said, quote, "No one ever asked me what I was doing. It was a wonderful time."
Oh my God.
Yeah. He was just walking in there doing whatever he needed
to
do.
He's never got in trouble for this?
Dude, yeah, no. It's crazy. So he then was able to obtain permission to conduct a lot of dermatology experiments from the superintendent of the prison. And this superintendent, this administrator, whoever the guy is, I didn't write down his name. He agreed that with Dr. K that the experiments could benefit the entire medical realm. Like, we could change history here, and it's going to benefit the prison. So absolutely, we're granting you access. Run your dermatology experiments here. However, there were no formal contracts between the prison, the city, and the University of Pennsylvania. So UPenn is involved in this.
So now he's gone over the head of his employers.
Exactly. So there's no contract stating that, like, UPenn, you're welcome to use us as a research facility. And there's no city authorization saying, Holmesburg Prison, you are allowed to partner with this crazy doctor to run experiments here on our prisoners.
Yeah, he was slipping that superintendent some cash under the rug.
Yeah, or something.
Yeah.
And everything that I'm about to tell you sounds like it was at the hands of Dr. K himself, because it is. I mean, technically it was, but eventually he was backed by a lot of sponsors, 33 to be exact, including Johnson & Johnson, Dow Chemicals, and the United States Army.
All right.
So he shied his way, snaked his way into this agreement and then got rich off of it.
Wow.
So it started with the focus on dermatology. And this makes sense because this was Dr. K's specialty. He was going to help with the foot fungus ordeal. Mm-hmm. So first they began to study the way a person's feet could be infected with ringworm. This was obviously the initial reason that even brought him out there. But then that study moved into a study where the prisoners were now infected with different skin viruses.
Oh.
We're like, oh, well, you know, maybe athlete's foot can come from, let's say, herpes simplex, both one and two. Let's go ahead and give the prisoners that.
Oh my God.
And that's what he does. Starts exposing the prisoners to herpes simplex, both one and two, aka cold sores and genital warts.
Oh my God.
Because now he's studying all skin types.
Now this is an outbreak.
Now this is a fucking outbreak. Yeah. Exactly. They then moved on to a study where they were exposing prisoners to long UV rays and different versions of yeast. And it was like an example of a fungal yeast, like Candida. You know, I can't fucking say that name. Anyway, yeah. Candida. Like that.
No, Candida.
Candida.
Candida? Question mark.
Yeah, I don't fucking know. Anyway, so it all starts out dermatological.
Dermatology.
It all started out very dermatology related, skin related. Mm-hmm. Made sense. Mm-hmm. He had permission to do that from the prison, not so much UPenn or the city. But then things escalated because the Dow Chemical Company hears about this and they want to reach out to Dr. K, see if maybe he could run a little bit of experiments for them. So they offer him, they give him a proposal and they say, we'll give you $10,000 if you run a study on the exposure of dioxin, the poisonous substance in Agent Orange. And Agent Orange was used by the United States military as part of a herbicidal warfare program when they sprayed over the agricultural land during the Vietnam War.
That is just so nasty.
And
like brutal.
Dow Chemical went above Dr. K and partnered with UPenn and Holmesburg, because this is why they wanted to run the study, because the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, had determined that this compound, dioxin, is far too dangerous to be released in the environment. Like, we're putting a ban on it. It's non-negotiable. Like, it's no longer allowed in the United States. It is not a pesticide. We're not spraying areas with it to kill insects and weeds. We're not doing it.
Right.
And Dow Chemical is like,
the fuck you say?
Whatever you think you're doing, we're going to partner with UPenn and this prison and Dr. K, and we're going to prove you the fuck wrong.
Yeah.
So they start to inject inmates with dioxin, the pesticide.
Inject? How did we get here?
In order to establish the whole reasoning behind this is to see how much a person, a human being, can tolerate dioxin, like to create a threshold dose of like how much we could be exposed without any side effects.
We just shouldn't be exposed at all. You just don't need to use it.
Yeah. Most cases had resulted in inmates producing chloracne, which is like, I looked it up and I know you know what it is. Just probably not the name. It's like basically clusters of like blackheads that form, and they'll last for like 4 to 7 months. And sometimes they get pus filled, but like it'll like kind of cover your whole body in like these little like blackhead bumps. But like they're not blackheads, but it's called chloracne. And it's basically acne that's produced by chemicals.
Right. And it's not black because of buildup. It's black because of the chemical.
And it also resulted in other skin issues like inflammatory pustules and papules. I'm not sure what that is.
Pustules. Yeah, pustules and
papules.
Papule. God, we have all the listeners at our dermatologists now that are listening.
Ladies, screaming.
I'm so sorry, but I hope you're enjoying us.
Anyway, all of these symptoms had lasted around 5 to 9 months. per prisoners. This dioxin experiment ran by Dow Chemical ran from 1965 to 1966, so only for 1 year. And the inmates were exposed to different levels of dioxin. And it's believed that what was documented, the levels that they were exposed to, wasn't the real levels that they were exposed to. Mm. And that the inmates were exposed to up to 468 times greater than what was written down and what was in company protocol the experiment.
Oh my God.
So that happens with Dow Chemical, right? Now word's getting around the country about
dirty business.
Dirty business going on at Holmesburg Prison. If you have any sort of research experiment that you need to have done on human beings, like Holmesburg is your place.
So you can't
These
get approved.
Prisoners are volunteering. They're giving them money. Like everyone's happy. Go around. Like lucky go me. But again, what was Holmesburg Prison? It was an isolation prison.
Right.
So these prisoners weren't able to talk to each other to see like
what's going on,
what the fuck's up.
Oh my God.
So this word spreads all the way to the United States Army, and they hear about this prison that's running experiments, and you bet your ass they are like, yo, we want in on that.
Wow.
So the United States Army reaches out to Dr. K and they contract him to test effects of certain mind-altering drugs. And I believe that this was never stated, but I do know that a lot of people believe this was LSD. And I think this was one of the locations where MK Ultra took place.
Wait, what year is this?
50s.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
60s,
right?
Yeah, 60s.
Yeah, because they also had that one, that same urgent clinic that was testing people with LSD out in Hashbury with Manson.
I think Holmesburg was one of the main sites for MK Ultra.
Yeah.
Because for this specific experiment, it wasn't like the Dr. K was walking around just like pulling people aside in the nurses' state or whatever. Mm-hmm. What are those called? The
like community.
What is it called? The little like inflammatory and the
infirmatory.
Infirmatory. The United States Army was like, nah, this isn't going to work in the infirmatory. We're going to move trailers to the prison grounds and we're going to have to take people off base, keep them in these confined trailers. And we're going to have to study these mind altering drugs that are not named because it's fucking classified. Most volunteers for this experiment say that they weren't aware of what drugs they were given because there were no consent forms to be signed.
And like, here's another thing, Army, are you guys going to be working triple security since we're taking prisoners in and out?
Right. To these trailers for right. whatever they're running, which I know my heart is MK Ultra.
I know too, yeah.
After about a month of the Army being there, somehow, I know I say it's an isolation prison, but like they are able to talk to each other, but not like they don't have playtime. Or
yeah, they like, don't get to go to like to the yard or like yeah, hang out.
And like have like cafeteria and stuff like that. Yeah. Like this prison was specifically built for isolation. So after about a month of the Army being there, word was kind of sneaking around inmate from inmate to stay the fuck away. Don't sign up for any research that the United States Army's name is on. Like stay away from the Army. Like don't do that stuff. Like stick with Dr. K's skin stuff. Like it's not worth the money. Like it's not worth anything because there was rumor that it was high levels of LSD and people were going crazy and staying crazy. So this specific experiment, whatever these mind-altering drugs were, probably LSD, we have prisoners saying it was LSD. This experiment didn't last too long, but whatever they were giving them, since it is classified, was known to have produced long-lasting effects like temporary paralysis, sudden long-term violent behavior, and multi-day-long hallucinations.
Oh my God.
LSD.
LSD, 100%.
Yeah, it was MKUltra.
Yeah.
Can't convince me. But like I said, they were paying these inmates off, which to the prison's eyes, to Dr. K's eyes, to UPenn's eyes, and to the city of Philadelphia's eyes, and the United States Army, and all of these different factors, that made it okay because these prisoners are volunteering and we're giving them money for it. Pay varied on what type of study they were involved in. And again, this was attractive to a lot of inmates. One inmate named Al Zabala later recalled, quote, this is a quote from Al. It says, I soon heard about the U of P, University of Pennsylvania Studies, and the good pay that they offered. They had all kinds of tests, foot powder tests, eye drop tests, face creams, underarm deodorant, toothpaste, liquid diets, and more. It was easy money, and we could make up to $10 to $300 a test, depending on how long that test lasted.
Okay.
So to these prisoners, they're out there and they're like, hey, we're doing a face cream test, $300.
We're going to go to the spa, bitch.
Hey, do you want to try our new underarm
deodorant?
Yeah,
me and you would have fallen that for that.
Oh, for
Fuck
sure.
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
You know, but like that's what these prisoners are being told.
Yeah,
like
easy fucking money.
Come test this toothpaste. It has dioxin in it. Small print. But hey, right. come come test this. Like, it's got a pesticide in it, but like,
right.
We can give you $300 this study. How long are you here? 5 years? Oh, the study's 5 years.
Perfect.
You can make $300 in 5 years. Like, a great deal.
Wow.
You know, and people were doing it because what other option, you know, like they weren't given the full information.
They have no idea what these long-term effects are going to be, short-term effects.
Exactly.
Or
they don't
side
even
effects.
Know what they're being told. They're testing toothpaste, right, and face creams.
They're like, we're working for
Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah. We're trying out new baby lotion.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We got Colgate. This is so fun.
And not only could you get paid to be a subject in the test, but they were also hiring prisoners to run the experiment. So Al said, the same guy, he said that he was an assistant technician and he was paid $40 to $50 a month, depending on the test that he was in charge of.
Mm-hmm.
And by, I think, in charge of, it's not like he's running the entire experiment, but like he'd be in charge of handing out these lotion packets.
Right.
Like, if you want to work this experiment, $40. So like, right, they were, in the eyes of everybody, this was a good deal.
Yeah, this does sound like a good deal.
You know, another inmate named Edward Anthony remembers signing up for a Johnson & Johnson study. And he said that they were testing a bubble bath product. They just wanted to see if it was harmful to anyone with an open wound. But it's just bubble bath. Like, babies lay in this. Bath. He was left in excruciating pain for months. He had sores growing on his back, like big, almost like acne pimples that were like filled with pus.
Oh.
Like, it was hard chemicals.
No.
That never would have passed in Johnson & Johnson.
No.
But was
Hell
tested
no.
on these prisoners.
Yeah.
Most inmates that partook in any of these studies were left with long-term health effects like skin problems, cancer, and even to this day, undiagnosable illness.
Oh my God.
And we discussed briefly the military's involvement and how it was quickly shot down by the prisoners themselves, because they were like, y'all stay the fuck away from the United States Army.
That.
But if we know one thing, we know they circled back the fuck around for round two. After World War One, the Geneva Convention.
Geneva.
The Geneva Convention of 1925 banned chemical weapons like chlorine and mustard gas. We've broken this down a million times, so we understand it. No, hopefully you guys do. But to Taylor and I, absolutely fucking not.
I mean, you guys are probably like, are you guys just not retaining that information?
We're not.
I can't. I don't know why. There's like a firewall
it's
in
like
my
we're
brain.
Not meant to understand the Geneva Convention.
We're not supposed to. Does anyway. Anyone actually understand it? I'm serious. No, like, not like a know-it-all raising your hand in class being like, I know what it is. No, that's not what I'm asking.
Could you break it down for a toddler?
Yeah.
And explain it to a four-year-old kid
to where I know through and through exactly what the Geneva Convention is and everything that it touches. That's what I want to know.
Yeah,
I know the basics. I need to know everything about it, and I have not come across a single person that can explain it to me.
No.
Not one. Not a YouTube video. Nothing.
No
you
one
find
gets
one,
it.
Send it to me. You're going to be the CEO of the Geneva Convention.
You will literally get a trophy from us.
Yes.
That says
I got
CEO
one.
CEO of, we will get one made.
You know what? I think that's something we should start now. Every intro we say like, what are we the CEO
of this
week? I think that's our
the
new
best
thing.
Best answer, you get a fucking trophy.
Yeah. And I need
once
to
a
know.
Month, a trophy goes out.
Yeah. And we'll compile them at the end of the month and pick
so
you.
What we know is that the Geneva Convention, they banned chemical weapons. They're like, chemical warfare not happening. We're not doing it. We're banning it. So even though the United States was at the Geneva Convention and they were like, we are with you. We stand with you.
Yes.
We love you, Geneva.
Geneva! Thank you, Geneva!
They were back at home like, yeah, so I know we said that, but like, we got to still develop this because everyone else is. Like, no one else is going to stop. So we need to keep developing these chemical agents and we need to have them for the purpose of chemical warfare, even though they just banned it. Fuck them, though.
Even though we're not allowed to do it, but everyone else is doing it. So
it makes it okay.
They jumped off the bridge. We got to go, too.
Yeah, exactly. Among these chemical agents that the United States continued to develop were these acutely toxic, bear with me here, anticholinesterase chemicals, aka incapacitating agents. So like, knock someone out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of which was 3 quinuclindinol cyclopentylphenyl glycolate, or EA3167.
I'm over this. This is, his name meant like the purple one.
Purple fire.
Purple fire. Purple fire flame. Like that. I don't need to hear glycocalycalycal. I don't want to hear that alien talk.
Like are we, I don't
speak fucking scientist. Yeah,
exactly. So this was, well, they did give it a name. And it,
I said scientist.
You're not a scientist.
Yeah.
Anyway, they did give it a name. It was EA13167.
That's not a name.
It's not. Are nope.
Are you Elon Musk?
Are you naming your kid?
Nope, you're not.
So this EA3167 was discovered accidentally when a researcher injected himself in the thumb. Immediately, he suffered from brain and nerve damage, which is terrifying, so scary. And the military should be like, put a stop to that.
You gotta stop this.
But they were immediately interested. So they approached University of Pennsylvania asking to test this specific compound at the Holmesburg Prison.
Oh, so now the University of Pennsylvania owns Holmesburg Prison?
Well, they run the research projects there, allegedly, even though there's no contractual agreement between anybody.
There's no documentation on this anywhere.
The UPenn's like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to sign up with us? Sign right here.
Pay us and yeah. Use the prison.
This is it.
Shit's so fucked up,
yeah,
guys.
They're like pimping out this prison.
For real, though.
Yeah. So fuck you, UPenn.
In this, they selected 19 male inmates between the ages of 22 to 37. And these selections were based off of the results of the inmates MMPI test, which is the Minnesota Multiphase Personality Inventory Test. And it's a psychometric test of adult personality. So it's just basically psychoanalyzing everyone. I want to take it.
Yeah. How do we take that?
How do we?
Does someone have to administer that?
Is that online or what?
Is that what the FBI is going to give me when they finally accept my application?
I mean, we're only in like 30 applications.
So I'm saying.
You better just send in another one. Yeah, you might get the MMPI test.
Maybe.
At first, this test. So again, they're testing this very dangerous compound that gives you brain and nerve damage.
Yeah.
At first, it was very monitored and they were measuring constantly your standard vitals, your heart rate, your blood pressure, your oxygen, like everything was being very closely monitored. But then it quickly changed from being moderated to being absolutely fucking unethical.
Oh, God.
This study was called the Threshold Doses in Humans and Evolutions of Drugs in Man. That's what they named it. So at first, remember, they selected 19.
Yeah.
Over 320 inmates were recruited to test these chemical agents that all multiple chemical agents, no longer just this EA, whatever it is. And these all affected nervous activity and the function of smooth muscles. And rather than increasing that, because again, they're trying to just their only research is to create that threshold. How much can a person endure before symptoms arise instead of moderating and, you know, 0.01.
Yeah.
Point
weaning.
0.02.
Yeah.
They were increasing the dosage by 40% at a time. So here are some of the agents that were tested and the noted symptoms of that threshold. I'm just going to kind of run through them. Agent 282 produced grogginess and lightheadedness at the threshold. Agent 834 produced mental impairment and hallucinations. CAR 302 produced lightheadedness. CAR 302 to 368, whatever the fuck, produced lightheadedness, slurred speech, and the lack of like drive, the will to live. Depression is a nice way of saying that. Agent 111 produced dullness of consciousness and difficulty distinguishing reality from fantasy.
Oh my God.
And Agent 668 produced Miley Cyrus songs. Wrecking Ball.
Became the producer for Wrecking Ball.
Agent 668 produced mildly high symptoms and intoxication. And again, what this is documented right here is just the threshold.
That's just.
And they were giving these inmates intakes of 40% above.
They were just shooting them up.
Fucked up.
It's awful.
It has been determined that over 254 chemical compounds were tested in the Holmesburg prison facility. But if it couldn't get any worse, if Dr. K couldn't get any worse, he's like, yeah, you know, I know I'm a dermatologist. I know the Army really likes me. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to apply for a license to the United States Atomic Energy Commission, AEC, so that I can store radioactive isotopes for testing on these prisoners. You're a dermatologist, bro.
What?
What do you need radioactive isotopes for?
What? You're just like he's literally a mad scientist.
Yeah. And the commission gives it to him.
Because
here you go.
Because if I went to the commission and I said,
I need to store radioactive isotopes for research for Crimson Crime podcast,
they would say, fuck out of here.
Yeah, you freaking lunatic.
What in the hell is wrong with you?
He is a mad scientist. That's a great word.
He's literally a mad scientist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
During this experiment that Dr. K is now running, radioactive testing, because fuck fungal infections.
Sure.
In athlete's foot.
That's all we came for.
Human skin was radioactively labeled, and I don't know necessarily what that means. I'm assuming exposed with S35 cysteine, H3 thymidine, C14 testosterone, and corticosteroid, and anywhere from 50 to 200 inmates were tested on. Dr. K claimed that these were radioactive, specifically the radioactive thymidine, posed absolutely no threat to any of the patients, and that none of these radioactive isotopes were consciously left in the bodies of these inmates. So like they'd come for the study, but we could remove them. We could inject them, expose them to something, and we had the machine, we had dialysis back there. We were just pumping it out. Like, bro, be fucking for real. You can't just remove radioactivity.
Yeah, like did they know that at that point? Or is he just done?
Well, just 2 years later, radioactive thymidine was disapproved.
Oh, yeah.
So they
found out. If they didn't know, they found out.
The radioactive testing by Dr. K was overseen by the dermatology department of UPenn.
Dirty.
UPenn is dirty.
Yeah, UPenn sounds like they should change their mascot to an inmate.
Literally.
Yeah.
Maybe change
mad scientist
to a mad scientist. Exactly. In 1973, there was a congressional hearing on human experimentation, and this was focused and brought to light solely from the Tuskegee syphilis study that had happened and the ethical and legal implications of human experimental research, then brought to light the horrors going on in Holmesburg Prison. So because of this pressure from the media, the public, and the now ex-inmates that have came out and they're watching on the newspaper, they're reading about the Tuskegee syphilis study, and they're like, the same fucking thing happened to us. Yeah. Why is no one talking about it? This put an immediate halt under all the testing at Holmesburg, and it ended like quickly. Got found out by the public, it was put to an end. Holmesburg tried to continue to defend themselves that these inmates, they had formal contracts, they were being paid. It's nothing like Tuskegee. Like, this was totally different scenario. Ours was ethical. Like, everyone knew the risk. Everyone knew what was going on. They signed a consent form. All is good and well. But there was a very heavy negative public opinion that put Holmesburg in a very negative light. So they stopped initially.
Thank God. Thank God those former inmates spoke up.
Yeah. Many advocates, there was people going public about the prison trials, advocates of the prison trials, like Solomon McBride, and he was the administrator of the prison, Holmesburg Prison. And he remained convinced that there was nothing wrong with the experimentation at the Holmesburg Prison. And he argued that these experiments were nothing more than just strapping patches of cloth with some lotion or cosmetics onto the backs of patients, and that this was just a way for prisoners to earn an easy income. Like, we were doing everyone a favor. We were giving them money. We were just slapping them with a little sticker of lotion.
You know, I kind of feel like...
No, you were injecting them with dioxin.
I kind of feel like that superintendent probably that thought.
Did think that.
Because, you know, you have mad scientists sitting here and be like, and then we're going to need the cochlear...
Then you have the United States Army being like, yeah, we're just slapping lotion on them. Everyone come to our trailer. It's guarded by machine guns.
Guards. And this is classified. So you can't come in, superintendent, unless you want to get tested on.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm sure that's what he thought. But you know, he knew. You know, reports were coming in.
And again, these advocates are coming forward like 5 to 10 years later. They're like, well, the Holmesburg Prison like contributed to a lot of societal advancements, especially in the medical world. Like, we wouldn't have Retin A. We wouldn't have tretinoin as an acne medication without the Holmesburg trials.
Sally?
Solomon?
It probably was. No, I'm talking about maybe his wife that was pushing for the retinol.
Maybe she was a Mary Kay seller. She sold Mary Kay.
You know, it was Mary Kay. Whoever the hell Mary Kay is, it's Mary Kay.
Solomon McBride, Mary Kay.
Yeah, that's who it is. Sorry.
She was a Mary Kay. No, she had the pink Cadillac, didn't she?
She did. She drove the pink Cadillac.
And she
because that's
like,
what I'm saying. Though, like, okay, advancements. It's not like he fucking cured cancer. Mm-hmm. You just figured out how to make us look younger.
Right. And everyone's case was
and
like,
I know that there's more to those medicines than just to make you look younger. I'm literally prescribed right. them. You know, I'm
yeah,
just
exactly. Yeah. Me
I'm
too.
Me, a person with acne over here. Okay, I get it. But I am just saying, like, seriously. Yeah.
And the case and a lot of these advocates were like, well, the prisoners, they wanted to participate. Like, this wasn't just voluntary. People were like begging to participate in our studies because they wanted the money. And like we were giving it to them. Like, what's the big deal?
You weren't giving them full
information. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's something called the Nuremberg Code, and it is this set of research principles on human experimentation set after World War II set because of Nazi Germany.
And because of Unit 737 or whatever it was.
Yeah. And the Nuremberg Code states this, quote, the person involved should have legal capacity to give consent, should be so situated as to be able to exercise free power of choice without the intervention of any element of force, fraud, deceit, duress, overreaching, or other ulterior form of constraint or coercion, and should have sufficient knowledge and comprehension of the elements of the subject matter involved as to enable him to make a very understanding and enlightened decision.
So we broke AKA, every single rule.
Get all the information out there. Let them know. Let them have a clear choice. Let them understand the risks, the side effects of these chemicals. And yeah, they broke the fucking Nuremberg Code.
They literally struck
they
through
violated
everyone.
It.
Every
and
single one.
It, the definition, they said, violate that sentence, and that sentence.
They said, let me get my red marker out.
Especially of informed consent, because a lot of the inmates, all of the inmates, didn't know the true nature and the dangers of these chemicals that they were subjected to during this experimentation. So when the United States, you know, the United States is involved in this, and they're like, we're the hero. Shut down the trials in Holmesburg Prison.
Don't worry. We and Geneva are here.
They broke the Nuremberg Code in order for us to be compliant.
We gotta
and
come
show our compliance and support to the Geneva Convention. Then, like
that, we
shut
created
it down.
And made all the rules that
shut
we just
it down.
Broke. We're coming.
Classify army. Classify that document. Shut it down, yeah. Dr. K. You horrible person.
Hey, you need to lock that shit up.
Fuck him, right, guys?
Like, what?
I mean, for real, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
Even though this was now 30 years after we were supposed to be following the Nuremberg Code,
so the United States knew about the Nuremberg Code.
They broke okay, their own and they're like, we need to show compliance. We need to shut the trials down. But also, they're like, back of the head, Nuremberg Code. Okay, Army, get your bag real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Let's test MK Ultra.
Classify that.
Classify
shit.
It. As the public became more aware of the testing that occurred within Holmesburg Prison, ex-prisoners started realizing that they had a right to sue.
Yeah,
those in charge of these experiments. UPenn, Dow Chemicals, Holmesburg, City of Philadelphia.
Johnson & Johnson.
Johnson & Johnson, Dr. Motherfucking K.
Yep.
Sue them all. United States Army, sue them all.
Sued.
In the 1980s, a lot of the prisoners who had participated specifically in the dioxin experiments filed lawsuits against Dow Chemical. Other groups like Johnson & Johnson, Dr. K and his company, and the University of Pennsylvania face a class action lawsuit filed by 298 ex-prisoners in the year 2000 is when this class action came. The lawsuit requested free medical care for their ongoing complications
issues.
That they are
yes.
having and continuing to arise, and financial compensation for those former for their time there and being test subjects.
Yeah, 100%.
And in 2002, the federal court ruled that a statute of limitations had passed and dismissed the case.
Oh, wow. Whoa. Statute of limitations?
Yeah.
Y'all just make up when that happens and when that comes
I
in this up
so.
Because I swear to God,
it's
different
changed.
Every time.
Everything is changed. The facility was closed in 1995. And out of all of this, there was one specific court case in 76 that caught a lot of attention. This is before the class action lawsuit. And that is Roach versus Kligman, Dr. Mm-hmm. Kligman.
Yeah.
Roach was a former inmate and test subject. His name was Jerome Roach. And he detailed the experiments he was subjected to while he was in the Holmesburg prison. His participation was a result of needing money to pay for very minimal day-to-day must-have needs and comforts like soap, toothpaste, stamps to send to his family, writing materials. And he talks about how he took a temperature pill, is what they called it, and was told that there would be no side effects. Sign okay. this, you know, we'll pay you money, sign this form, take this temperature pill, no side effects. However, within 4 days, it says, quote, Roach developed various symptoms of physical illness, sore throat, sore joints, fever, nausea, sores, rashes. And in addition to these symptoms, he was improperly treated for them by the prison doctor, who gave him penicillin without knowing or inquiring if he was even participating in an experiment. So he was like, here are your symptoms, syphilis, penicillin. But didn't ask him, what chemicals were you exposed to?
And he didn't even know. And there's so much lack of communication because there's no formal report that Dr. K is even working with this prison or these inmates, that maybe the doctor didn't even know.
Right. Jerome Roach also noted how he received inadequate care outside of his medical treatments, recounting that his cell had water leaking from the roof. And following development of symptoms, the prison failed to provide adequate facilities to screen, monitor, and treat him to avoid serious illness. Despite his claims of inadequate and negligent care, the court dismissed all claims against Dr. K because the government was in on it. Several other lawsuits were filed in the early 1980s against Dr. Klingman, the Holmesburg Prison, and Dow Chemical. Most of these lawsuits, such as those filed by Jones and Smith against the doctor, the university, the city, Dow Chemical Company, were settled out of court. So they were paid off.
They tossed some cash.
And one final quote from our very sick motherfucker, Dr. K, and this is what I'm ending with today, is this quote. All those people could have leukemia now. About one chance in 20 billion. And I could be hit by an asteroid when I walk out the street, but I don't think I will. And that is the dark history of Trenton Owen, Dr. K, and the conspiracy turned true of human test subjects for the United States government.
This guy,
Holmesburg Prison, Dr. Klingman.
This guy is so mad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mad's the word.
Yeah.
This guy is so mad and clearly incredibly intelligent, because he may or may not be. I'm not going to formally diagnose him, but I would love to see a brain scan on this guy.
Uh-huh.
I would say that he's probably a sociopath.
Yeah.
And that in his head, he can only give, like, his version of empathy is statistics. And you want to know what a sociopath is to me?
Right. He walked in the prison and said all he saw was skin.
Skin. Dude.
And he's proud of that.
Yeah.
That's his famous quote.
He saw all these subjects.
I was like a farmer looking at a fertilized field.
Sitting there looking at all these people where he's like, I had so much skin. All he's sitting there doing is running the numbers.
Yeah.
Like, okay, now if I tested this many people, what are the chances that this many people would die from it?
And I do want to talk about here, because I did mention the Tuskegee syphilis study, that it was shown that I think the number was 80% of these test subjects were African-American.
I mean, just like with the anthrax attacks.
Yep.
And they're like, it was an attack. No one knew. Mm-hmm. No one knew about any of these studies that were going on. No one knew about any of this. Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Where do you think these chemicals come from? They're from the government.
Yeah.
God, now I sound like a conspiracy theorist, but we've just covered these cases so many times.
And I just covered a conspiracy theory turned fucking true.
Over and over and over and over and over again. Wake up. Like, people, you're being targeted by these mad scientists that have the backing and are able to convince
coerce.
Yeah, these baby back bitches that are in the government to get them some cash tossed at them and go around an entire city and a university.
How is Dow Chemical, how is Johnson & Johnson still
in business
after things like
and
that?
And trusted brands. These are not brands that you're
brands that you put on your baby.
Yeah, these are brands that you're putting on newborns that you're like, I'm going to go to the baby aisle and what is it? Johnson & Johnson.
You're like, no, don't get me that. Don't get me the Target brand. I want Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah, I need Johnson & Johnson. By the way, did y'all see that a bunch of Target like brand stuff just got recalled?
Mm-mm.
Oh my God, so much just got recalled. Like, bad recall.
Shit.
I saw it on Lemonade or whatever that.
Gonna have to download.
Lemon Infinity or whatever it is.
Anyway, that's all I got. I was really long, so.
That was crazy good though. It was really good. Thank you so much for that.
Sorry to interrupt. I just need to talk about the holiday season. My holiday season is packed with travels beyond travels, and I don't really want to go to the grocery store because guess what? I never eat it or I never cook it, and then it goes bad because I'm out of town that weekend. So that is why Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service, is the best option for me during this insane holiday season.
With Factor, you're going to save time, eat well, and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle while tackling all of your holiday to-dos.
With Factor, you can skip that extra trip to the grocery store and the shopping, the prepping, the cleaning up too, while still getting the flavor and nutritional quality that you need. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes. minutes. So all you have to do is heat and enjoy.
Oh, it's our favorite thing to do. And guys, I've said it once, I'll say it forever again. I know that this isn't about the smoothies, but I love them.
We're obsessed.
And I'll never get over the smoothies, all right? But also, if you're looking for some special occasion meals during the holiday, you know, like Friendsgiving, but only for the girlies, a girlsgiving or a girlsmas.
But you're all working ladies. Yeah. And you don't have time to cook.
You don't have time to cook. And also, who the heck wants to cook around this time of year?
Or maybe you're preparing for that New Year's Eve resolution and you're looking for some calorie conscious options over the holidays that also taste great, because we know everyone's New Year's resolution is I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to eat right.
I'm going to go to the gym.
You can try their delicious dietitian approved calorie smart meals with around or less than 550 calories per serving.
And you can enjoy extra convenience at any time of the day with their assortment of 45 plus add-ons to suit various preferences and tastes. Choose from breakfast, like their delicious apple cinnamon pancakes, 10 out of 10, bacon and cheddar egg bites,
mouth watering,
and potato, bacon, and egg breakfast skillet.
Amazing.
Or like I've said before, you can get one of their cold pressed juices, shakes, and my favorite smoothies.
Head to factormeals.com/creepsandcrimes50 and use code creepsandcrimes50 to get 50% off.
That's code creepsandcrimes50 at factormeals.com/creepsandcrimes50 to get that 50% off.
We love you, Factor. Thank you very much. Okay, what do you have?
This is like such a curveball.
Okay.
And
I'm excited.
I did this because I was like, you know, I've kind of, we went really hard.
Yeah, we did.
We went really hard. And I personally haven't recovered because we've also been doing Patreon from what the public's hearing. And we've also gone very hard on Patreon as well. Clearly, we're in a dark place. So I was like, let me take it easy. Let me take it easy today. And I'm going to do one of my favorite things, a heist. You guys know I love a good heist.
Yes.
Like when
Southern
people
mafia
are like,
kick.
You love, people are like, oh, you love true crime. And I'm like, not like what you're thinking. I'm obsessed with heist.
Yeah.
Any heist is my thing. It's my shit. Anything mafia, that's my thing. This is not mafia. This
Golden
is just
toilet,
a heist.
My shit.
Golden toilet, Patreon. If you know, you know.
My shit.
My shit. Anyways, today I'm covering the case. I'm going to call it the Bank of America heist. However, I do want to tell you guys like what the most common name for this story is dubbed by the media. And it's DB Tuber.
Like DB Cooper.
It's just like DB Cooper.
That's so weird. I literally
That's what I was saying. That's what I was like, that's so crazy.
You're like, you'll see later. I was just talking to her about DB Cooper. And I was like, there was an update. And the update wasn't really an update. It was just like the FBI found evidence that they think that they know who he is. Mm-hmm. Da, 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 da. They never went public with it. But she was like, that's so weird. You say that. You'll find out later. I'm like, why are you covering it?
I didn't even tell her. No. So this is DB Tuber. And this, you'll see why it's called DB Tuber. But it's so, the funniest part about it to me is that it was dubbed by a radio host that was kind of like grilling the suspect. So here
like live?
Yeah, like on air.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it's really funny. This is in Monroe, Washington, like Washington State. And this is a very small, small town. In 2008, the population was like roughly 17,000 people, according to the U.S. Census. It was known for being this like everyone knows everyone type of town. Mm-hmm. Just 30 miles northeast of Seattle. So a lot of people were commuting to Seattle to go and still, you know, to go to work and stuff. But they just wanted this like small town feel. And it's grown pretty significantly, just as everywhere has in the last, you know, since then. However, it's still got that like safer small town vibe to it.
Yeah.
September 30th, 2008 at 11 a.m., a bunch of landscapers arrive at this local strip mall. It's kind of what you would imagine when you're thinking when a major company sends out someone to do their landscaping.
Yes.
So it's a group that is huge and they're all in matching outfits. Mm-hmm. And
matching dark blue t-shirts.
That's or green. Exactly. It's dark blue. That's crazy because they're wearing work boots. We're doing really good today. They're wearing work boots, blue long sleeve shirts, like dark blue long sleeve shirts, yellow safety vests, the fluorescent ones, blue hats, and protective particle masks. So you can't really see who these people are at all. And I believe the majority of them were wearing long pants, except for one person. At 11:05 a.m., so just 5 minutes after the landscapers arrive and begin working, a Brinks truck arrives at the Bank of America. And the Brinks truck is who is moving. moving around the money.
The money guy.
It's an armored vehicle that's driving around. I know you know what I'm talking about.
Anyways, so this arrives.
Every time I pass one, I get scared.
I passed one the other day and I was like, Logan, is that a SWAT car? And he was like, no, it's the Brinks truck. And I was like, I didn't see the logo.
Do you remember when you worked at American Eagle, right?
Yeah.
Remember when you worked in retail and the trucks would come up and yeah. it would be like this big ordeal and my manager would like lock the back door and like
we had to
like,
do all these procedures.
I don't want your money. Actually, I love it.
Wait, what is that TikTok sound that's right now? It's like, we don't want your mom's recipe to your mom's mac and cheese. Yeah. That is literally it. Yeah, that's exactly that. I don't care. I don't care. I'm just here to fold the jeans and go home and get my 40% off discount from American Eagle.
Yeah. Okay. I'm like, I earned one's a Steelers jersey this year, so I need the discount.
That's why I needed to come work here, all right? 11:05 a.m. Brinks truck arrives at Bank of America. And the Bank of America is in this like parking lot of the strip mall, as it typically would be, okay. as she should. It's a big strip mall, and there's like a Jack in the Box on the inside, and then another little building, and then the Bank of America. So per usual, the security guard in the truck, Willie Valdez, he gets out, he opens the back doors, he grabs two bags of cash and then a cart, like a buggy, with four boxes of coins. He shuts the doors, he puts everything on the little cart, and he begins wheeling it in. So as he is walking towards the front door, he's less than 4 feet away from it at this point, and this is all seen on the bank CCTV footage, the landscaper in the shorts that was spraying the grass farther away from the larger group of landscapers begins sprinting towards the front doors of the Bank of America, but specifically at Willie. He gets up to Willie in the cart with the money and sprays him with an entire can of mace.
Ouch.
An entire can. That will kill a bear. That will kill a room full of
people.
And that
also is probably going to backfire and get in your
eyes.
Don't
forget, he's wearing
the mask.
Safety glasses as well. So he unleashes this can of mace on Willie. And of course, this is a lot. A whole can. Like, you don't need more than just like, psst, okay?
Right.
Falls to the ground, is incapacitated,
freaking out,
can't breathe, can't see. This landscaper, quote unquote landscaper, grabs the two canvas bags of cash and begins sprinting across the parking lot, across the street, down this little path that's like gravel into the woods that's called Eagle Park. According to the bank CCTV footage, this entire ordeal from the time Willie pulled up to the time that this all went down, it was 30 seconds.
Whoa.
And that is also the official time on the formal police report. So clearly this is very well planned.
Yeah.
And practiced.
They knew what they were doing, where they were going, how they were getting it.
Right. So he is sprinting across the street and down to this like Eagle Park. Now across the street, directly across the street from the Bank of America, is a realtor, and it's called Ruth. It's his office. It's Ruth Realty. And his name is Mitch Ruth that owns it, right? He sees through his big window this going down, and he's on the phone with a customer. So he says to his customer on the phone, or client, hey, I gotta go. The bank's being robbed. He sprints out his front door, calls 911, begins chasing this landscaper robber guy into Eagle Park. And he loses sight of the guy at the tree line and is looking through the woods. But I guess he's on the phone with 911. So 911's like, back up, get away, get away, get away. And he lost him. However, he did watch as this robber began stripping off his hat, his safety glasses, his mask, a long brown wig and shorts and a shirt that looked to have been like Velcroed in pieces onto his body.
Like ripped yeah. pants.
Yeah, but not even like that. Like Velcroed onto other clothes that are underneath that changes who this person is entirely.
Holy
That's
shit.
That's how thought
Calculated,
out this is.
Yeah.
So this realtor is on the phone with 911 chasing after him and is watching this dude, mind you, carrying two bags of cash, rip off his clothes that were Velcroed
Changing
onto his body.
Entire identity.
Right. Police arrive just seconds later and they interview all of the witnesses, all of the other landscapers, the security guard that's been Mason is in the back of the ambulance being treated, Willie, and Mitch, who pursued him. And they determined that $400,000 in cash were in those bags that this person stole.
That's heavy.
How do you run that fast that no one can catch you with $400,000 in bags? Morgan.
So Morgan. Many stacks.
We tried running with a camera to film our season four video. That was maybe like, what, 15 pounds at the most?
And we could go 10 feet.
You know what? I'm lying. It was not 15 pounds. It was definitely like 3, but it liked to kill me.
Heavy.
My back is still messed up.
Let's be generous. 8 pounds.
Yeah, I'm going to say so. I mean, that's like if I was holding Ophi up and sprinting around town.
Yeah.
You know, like that's not going to be good for you. Right. You're not going to be able to get far.
My arms would be dragging.
So this person's got to be incredible, like has trained for this.
Right.
This person has been running with center blocks under their arms.
2 layers of clothes.
While stripping off Velcroed clothes.
Wig.
A wig. Can't see. Can't breathe. Also still probably coughing with a little bit of mace in them. I mean, this is incredibly planned out.
Yeah.
Willie is okay. He ends up being okay.
Good.
He gets treated, thank God. Meanwhile, the other landscapers that are dressed just like this robber are freaking out, dude. And they're just screaming and telling police, we got scammed. And police are like, what do you mean you got scammed? What are you talking about? Turns out that there was this Craigslist ad that had gone out, and it was said to be posted by the, quote, Clean Monroe Beautification Project. And it was a 9-day landscaping job that was going to pay $28.50 an hour during the recession, because it's 2008. And these people were just going to work for 9 days, reasonable hours. They just had to get their own gear, the work boots, the safety glasses, dark blue long sleeve shirt, the safety vest, proper footwear, and had to wear pants. And the ventilator mask. They had to bring all of that.
This was strategic.
Yes. And they said that, and the ad said, just come at 10:30 a.m. that morning that all of this happened and you will be paid for your work. You were supposed to gather in the lot between Jack in the Box and Bank of America.
I mean, at least don't steal from these people who are already struggling.
Right.
At least be like,
think about who was hit during the recession.
I'm about to steal $400,000, but you guys don't know that. So let me go ahead and pre-purchase you all the same matching shirt and vest. All you can show up is in pants and work boots.
This was day one.
Okay.
So all of the landscapers, they were like, we've been looking for work.
Yeah.
And because
it's heartbreaking.
Landscaping went under during the recession. In terms of like just residential business that they would typically be getting.
Right.
No one had the extra money to get someone to mow their lawn. Just get your ass out there and mow your own lawn.
Yeah.
You know, like that's just how it was. That was something that you could justify releasing.
Mm-hmm.
And now all these people buy all this stuff. They go out. They're like, I'm going to make great money. And now they're a part of a bank robbery heist.
And they all look like the suspects.
Exactly. Thank God they were good people and just were like, we got scammed. We're freaking out. Because like, I don't know if I was a part of that, I might have just fled. I might have just dipped and they would have been searching for me for 3 days.
For sure.
Now they're like, okay, let's go talk to Mitch and see what he saw. So Mitch takes the detectives over to where he lost the robber landscaper Velcro shirt dude. And this leads to a path that came to a dead end at a creek. And this creek was 2 feet deep. That was it. That was all that they could find. So they collected all the discarded items and they began doing a very intense search of the area using dogs, helicopters, you know, search and rescue workers. But they don't find anything for the first hour of the search, which is pretty concerning considering this just happened.
Right. He couldn't have gone too far. He's on foot.
Right.
They saw.
And there should be at least something that he's dropped. A dollar, maybe. One. Well, just after the 1 hour mark, one of the searching officers, who is regularly just a patrol officer, makes a discovery. 200 yards downstream in this creek, hidden under some underbrush, is a black and yellow inner tube, thus DB tuber.
Oh my God.
And on it is a part of a Velcroed torn shirt, a radio that is Velcroed to the tube, a steel cable that is tied between a tree and a fallen log, which they believe.
In this 2 foot creek.
And the robber used this steel cable that he had put up to pull himself across. But there were no other discoveries. That was it. So they're like, all right, we need more clues.
He could have ran across the creek.
Right. What?
2 feet.
Right. And so investigators are like, let's go back to the CCTV footage because we're embarrassing ourselves here. So they go back to the CCTV footage and they can tell that this is a white man. He's tall. He looks to be young and a bit athletic after really analyzing his body language because of the way that he was running and the form that he was running. So if he wasn't currently an athlete, he formerly was. But that's it. That's all they can tell.
That's all they got.
That's all they got. However,
in an inner tube,
like we were talking about deep breathing as you're sprinting in a ventilator mask, there's going to be some DNA in that, sure. And definitely going to have some at least hair that they can test for DNA so on that wig.
I would be like, oh my
spitting
God.
All over it. So they have crazy. This wig and this mask and they send it off to be tested. They get a DNA profile. They have one on both, and both of the DNA profiles that they found match the wig and the mask. However, it was not matching with anyone in CODIS. And again, this is 2008. So CODIS isn't as big as it is now, but it was pretty developed at that point in time. So they're going to have to go old school again. The next day, a patrol officer who is helping in the search, something jogged his memory. Immediately, he was like, this is the key. This is what it is. This is what we're going to do. So he goes up to the detectives and he's like, listen, a few weeks ago on September 9th, a report came in that I followed up on from a public works employee named Randy Osh. He was working on a sewer near the Bank of America when an unhoused man came up to him and told him that he thinks he discovered a robbery kit. Randy's like, oh, okay, what do you want me to do? And the man's like, can you please call the law, because I've touched it. My fingerprints are on it. I touched it. So we need to call them.
Yeah.
Or they're going to come.
I thought I was getting goodies.
We're going to come get me. So basically, he tells Randy that he was panhandling beside the Bank of America, and he went around back between either the Jack in the Box or the Bank of America beside the dumpster, and he's just looking around when he found a radio. So he picks it up and he's looking at it, and then he looks at what's beside it, and it's a wig and sunglasses and mace and a ventilating particle mask. So he's like, yeah, my fingers are all over that shit, and it's a robbery kit. I can tell from looking at it, so you need to call the police. And Randy does. He calls the police for him. The unhoused man tells Randy, hey, I'm going to go sit beside it. I'm going to wait on them. Tell them just come on over here when they're ready. He waits. Police never come. Well, when they did come, the unhoused man was gone, and so was this quote-unquote robbery kit.
Okay.
So where is this man now that was with the robbery kit and worried about his fingerprints being on it? Because we got to talk to him.
Yeah.
So they track him down. They locate him at an encampment on the banks of the Snohomish River. I know I might have said that a little wrong, but
that's
definitely
wrong.
I was trying my best, all right? I really went in with a lot of confidence behind it. Police find him. They walk up to him and they're like, yo, are you the guy that we're looking for? And he said, it's about damn time.
I've been waiting on you, motherfucker.
That's exactly what he said. He was like, where have y'all been? I've been waiting on y'all. And he even said, I knew y'all would come. I knew you guys would come. So I've been keeping my mind sharp by buying newspapers and following along with the case so I didn't forget anything. And he had been writing it down over and over again so he wouldn't forget it. I know, right? So police are like, okay, let's figure out who this man is. His name is Alan Dean. He's 53 years old, and he is a convicted felon who is out of prison. He was originally from the Ozarks, and he was just being unhoused there, just trying to save money, panhandling because he couldn't get a job because he was a felon, just so he could go back to the Ozarks to see his kids.
I'll cry.
So he like tells them and he's like, okay, but that's my backstory. Let me tell you what happened that day. So he explains that he was waiting beside the robbery kit by the dumpster for police to come. When police are taking their sweet ass time, he's getting bored. So he starts doing a crossword puzzle. He's doing his crossword puzzle when a car pulls up beside him at the dumpster, and a man gets out. And it's this white, tall, young man. It's a silver car. This man jumps out of the car and is walking near Alan Dean and says, hey, man, I wouldn't mess with that stuff, referring to the robbery kit. And Alan says, yeah, I wouldn't either. I already called the law. They're on their way. And the man who just got out of the car and said this to him says, why would you do that? And grabs up the stuff, jumps in the car, and quickly races out of the parking lot.
Oh my God.
So when police don't come, and now this robbery kit got taken from him, Alan waits around and police still don't come. So he's like, I gotta go home.
Yeah.
I gotta go home.
Yeah.
But luckily, as the car was driving off, he remembered the license plate number and wrote it down in his crossword puzzle that he was doing.
I love this guy.
He's the savior. And so he gives it over to police. He's like, I've been rewriting it so I wouldn't forget it. Here it is. I've been saving this for you guys. He's so proud of himself. And he gives it over to police.
Scream.
Police run the plates and they get a match. It's someone local. The Curcios. I think that's how you say it. Curcio's. That's how you say it. Curcio's. But specifically, the car was owned by Emily Curcio. She was a 27-year-old local woman, and she was very, very well known. She grew up in Monroe. She was a captain of the cheerleading squad. She was dating the local hometown football hero slash high school football captain. They both go to WSU. She is an honor student, and she graduates with her bachelor's in communications. Hey, Fran. She marries her high school sweetheart, who is 28-year-old Anthony Curcio. Together, they have two daughters and they both go into real estate. Emily is an agent and Anthony is a real estate investment company owner. He's flipping houses and stuff. They buy their first big house. It's a lakefront property. They have luxury cars. They get their two young girls in private preschools and all the fun things that rich people can do. And in 2008, we all know what happens. Great recession. And business downfalls, she's free falling. It's not good because now your only two sources of income are coming from the real estate side of all this and it's gone. Right. So there, I mean, and as someone who that was my predicament in 2008 with my family, that's a terrifying reality to be in. His business is falling apart. They're on the verge of having to foreclose on their home. Their cars are like days away from being repoed. They're in crazy credit card and personal debt. AKA, this sounds like a lot of motive. As police are reading about this, you know, they're like,
for sure,
that trucks, you know. So detectives do some digging and Anthony has a very troubling history in addition to all of the motive that he might have. Number one, he ran scams throughout college to steal furniture and money. He would create fake sports memorabilia and sell it to collectors for cash. He would dress up and rent a moving van and act like he was a moving company and steal from people. He tried to do his dad's landscaping company. Like, that was his dad was a big landscaper. Red flag.
Right.
He ended up, I think, like tanking his dad's business when he tried to take over it. But this was all at the same time that he was in a failed college slash professional football career due to a career ending injury.
Regardless, he's an athlete.
And he is prescribed lots and lots of painkillers and he gets addicted and he goes to rehab. He goes into recovery. But then when the recession hits, he begins using again, which creates more debt. And he also had been in a pissing contest with the Washington Board of Gamblers. I don't know, because he opened up a failed casino business and there was a scam that was involved in that. And his drug usage is costing him $15,000 a month.
Whoa.
So his life is in shambles. At the time that police connect all these dots, it had been a few days after the crime. Guess who was on a trip to Las Vegas?
Oh, our friend
Anthony. Anthony
Curcio. $400,000 in cash.
Right.
On black.
So the FBI begins surveillance on him as soon as he gets home from his trip. They find a Gatorade bottle that he threw away at a gas station that he was using as a dip spitter. I hate that.
I'd pack them. What's the saying?
I don't even know because it's going to make me throw up. So whatever it is, I don't want to know it. So either way, they get his spit cup and they do DNA testing on it. They get a DNA profile for him off of it and they compare it to the mask and the wig DNA samples. And it's a perfect match.
Oh,
they got their guy. He was arrested on November 3rd, 2008 in Lake Stevens, Washington.
What?
Guys, if you don't know what we're talking about,
if you have, you need to go to season one.
Like season one. So when we first started the podcast, we've talked about this all the time. We had no one listening. Why the hell would anybody listen to this
show? No one listening. And we were counting our, we were able to literally count that this city has 60 listeners. Mm-hmm. This city had 20. This one had 8 and this one had 158. And our largest city for a year or two.
More. I mean, it's still one of the largest cities that we have today. It just doesn't say Lake Stevens anymore.
Guys, since the beginning.
Since episode one.
Our largest city was Lake Stevens, Washington.
And we're like, who is up there?
We're like, what did we uncover?
And then we did find something about Lake Stevens, Washington.
Yeah, it was like a part of this giant portal thing that goes on and or like some sort of like
a bunch of tech companies do something there, have warehouses. Oh, yeah.
To explain it is that most of our not produced.
It's
there,
like a ping. I don't know.
It's like a ping.
That's how they explained
it. Our heads were like, whoa, this must be a portal.
I feel like they're like, we're like, who is this?
who doesn't like Stevens.
Yeah. Anyways, it's just really weird. We've never once come across anything about Lake Stevens, Washington, other than the fact that they are our number one city all the time.
DB Tuber.
Yeah, DB Tuber. So he's arrested on November 3rd, 2008, Lake Stevens, Washington. He, at the time that he was arrested, he was in a Target parking lot handing off a bag with $17,000 inside to a friend, just getting out of his brand new Range Rover. Police determined that there were two accomplices, a getaway driver and a warehouse owner. And at the time of the arrest, there were only $220,000 of the $400,000 remaining. He ends up making a deal with police to take full responsibility. His accomplices have never been named or arrested.
Wow.
Wait. I know who did it, right? I feel like everyone knows. Mitch and his wife.
Mitch,
the other realtor that went on the pursuit after him.
Oh.
They're all realtors. And Mitch just can't happen to catch up to the dude who's carrying 500 pounds worth of cash.
Yeah.
And ripping off Velcro clothes. Okay.
It's like, hey, one second.
I'm not actually saying that because these people are like, you know, I don't want to get sued. Like, I'm not actually saying that. But wife, though. Mitch, it did look really sus.
Mitch, you don't got a lot going for you right now.
Yeah. Life. I'm like,
not in our eyes.
Sorry, man. I don't know. Do you have a warehouse? But I think wife was the getaway driver. She claims that she had no idea, that she never once knew that this was him.
And that very well could be true. Husband going down financial turmoil and doesn't want to appear to wife as...
They're going down together, though. They own the same company.
You're right.
So let me...
But did she know about his drug use, his gambling debt?
She did.
Like, prior to all of this, because he could be trying to cut...
I don't know if she knew that he had, like, relapsed, but I do know that... that she knew how bad their situation was. A lot of people were very desperate at this point in time. I mean, they're still married to this day.
So is he and Joe.
We're about to use that. They end up charging him with robbery and witness tampering. They sentence him to 72 months in federal prison.
That's it.
During which he wrote and illustrated many books, but mainly children's books. I think he's published 20 since then. One being My Daddy's in Jail.
No, I'm buying it.
I need it right now. And he also wrote like an autobiography, but also just like kind of about his story and like how it was for him to be in jail and like what pushed him to get to this point where he was like, I'm going to go rob a bank. He writes about his addiction and everything just so people could learn from his mistakes, because he got sober while he was in prison. And he just was like, why the hell did I do that? The name of this autobiography is
DB Tuber.
Heist and High. And I'm like, that's a great name.
That is good.
That's a great name. He also discusses the horrors of being in prison and why no one should ever commit a crime, because it apparently was awful that he basically slept in a pool of cockroaches. Anyways, he gets released on April 4th, 2013 and becomes a motivational speaker. To this day, he's still married. Two daughters are grown, I guess, now. And Anthony says that in all of his years living in Monroe, Washington, which was his entire life other than when he went to college, he had never once seen an unhoused person. And he said, quote, Alan Dean must have been my guardian angel, end quote.
And then police gave Alan Dean, for his hard work,
no, and detective skills, a big reward. And it was money so he could buy a Nissan Pathfinder, and he drove to the Ozarks to go be with his children, and they just like waved at him as he drove off.
I scream and cry. Oh my God. What a good police officer.
Oh my God. It's so sweet. And he was like, guys, I've been buying newspapers and reading this so I could just make sure I did not forget any single detail. So he's a detective. He should be an honorary detective.
I agree.
Yeah.
He needs a badge.
How sweet. I have no idea what his crimes were, but so, you know, if someone Googles it and something horrific, don't hold that against us. But I just want to think that he was probably just, you know, maybe he had robbed a bank once or twice in his lifetime.
Yeah, well, he knew what it was. He's like,
Yeah, he was like, this is a robbery kit. And poor
if
Randy.
If I saw that, I would be like, why did someone throw their junk out here? Like, I wouldn't.
No,
see,
I'm thinking, oh my God, there must have been a date party last night. You know, like that's
exactly. He's like, yeah, someone's about to rob this bank. Might want to call police.
Right. The poor sewer guy, Randy Osh, is like, how do you know what that is?
He's like, don't worry about it.
Anyways, guys, we got to go to bed. It's late.
Love ya.
Love ya. Bye.
Bye.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.